Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Kind of a challenging presentation. I'm glad some of you folks remember some of those names. Well, I won't elaborate about one or two of those. I'm going to ask, I think they're ready for us now. I'm going to ask Sue to tell us what to do. Will you tell us, please?
Well, I suggest the head table and the people to 1922 go first. If you would rather be served, it's difficult to go over there to the team to select. Raise your hand, and there are five young ladies to bring you a servant.
Thank you.
turned out to be a godsend anyway, because our program was going to be a little too long. With a break like that, we'll see if I can talk. I want to acknowledge, I forgot to mention one thing earlier. We had invited Dr. Black's daughters to be with Dr. Hardy's daughters to be with us. A combination of pistons and ill health made it impossible for them to be here, but they sent their best wishes to us. We asked, to continue now with our reminiscences, we asked several people who were at school between the years 19... You both go ahead and meet, for heaven's sake. Between 1910 and 1920, to reminisce for us, and they were all taken with great attacks and bashes. We couldn't calm them into doing it. Then I was asked, because I was a kid in the training school from 1914 to 1922. Somebody suggested that the training school was really part of normal school. Maybe I could give some doddering references to what it was like to be here then in the elementary school. For those of you that are not acquainted with the training school, now, thanks to Ronald Reagan, deceased, but it was a real good school for a long, long time. And they took selected groups of youngsters, tried to weed out the troublemakers, but they never succeeded, to serve as guinea pigs for the student teachers, and they had a supervisor over each grade, the super-duper principal, and super-duper faculties all around to help the student teachers. We got superior education there. We also had our moment. Three professors, I agreed to do this just because thought somebody ought to, and I couldn't find anybody else who would. Three professors stand out in my memory as a kid there. This is elementary. First was Professor Bliss. You remember him with his bad diet? Great person. Let me try. He used to come in, a historian. He had a unique capacity to relate to children. I think we thought he was God or Christ or something because of that beard. When he first came in. But he taught us about European history, the Crusades, he taught us how to explain it with Grecian history, and the history of the United States. He really quite wonderful. Herbie Alcohol came in as a young man. Sure. That soft voice of his, which may have put some people to sleep, but certainly did not put us to sleep. He read his poetry to us and opened up old business, and I'm sure changed the lives, at least the literary appreciations of all of us who listened. Then Professor Skillman, now he hasn't been mentioned. The one that really didn't know, he was very tall, thin, angular, and during these years he rode a motorized bicycle, you couldn't call it a moped, a motorized bicycle 70 years before they became popular, 60 years. And my first memory of him was taking off into the wind after school down Normal Street, unnamed Normal Street, bouncing around, hanging on to his hat with one hand, coattail about mine, and his more starting on pushing me down. You saw it too. Well, he was an astronomer, and it came as a surprise to anyone that he didn't realize he was really an eminent astronomer with any number of papers and books in this field. He taught us about astronomy, of course, and the thing that I remember most was coming up at night with his telescope and looking through the telescope and seeing the wonders of the heavens. Very patient, totally kindly, dedicated man, Professor Skillman. During my years, there were three different principals. Miss Black, whom I've already mentioned. Florence Smith, you folks may remember Miss Florence Smith Pickard. Sure. With those flashing blue eyes. She was principal for several years before she went over to the college faculty as professor of English literature. And then William L. Knight. Remember Mr. Knight? What do you remember? We were so lucky. I have always admired him since those days. I tried to write. I tried his routine and failed miserably. He used to get up 4 o'clock every morning in the year and work on the textbooks which he sold. He became the most prolific writer of social studies textbooks. He got quite wealthy out of them. Can you imagine getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and getting 3 or 4 hours in before he came over to work all the time here? He did that for years. He was a very fair-minded principal. Various times, kids get in trouble. And I recall hanging on to the doorknob of his office and thinking, oh my God, here you are again. Why can't you behave yourself? saw a teacher in this group who was one of them who sent me in the scene once, and she's here today, but I didn't say anything about it. He was very fair, and he would listen intently and then make a good considered judgment. No one ever resented the punishments he meted out. When they tore down the old building, I went over and stole from his office the doorknobs. And I took him to my office. For at that time, I was spending many hours a day interviewing boys and girls in trouble. And I kept him there to remind me what it feels like to be in trouble in this office. It was pretty quite practical. Incidentally, that old building, did you know we were lucky to get out of it alive? I was working in the school district when I took it over. The engineers discovered that those decorations out of those columns were held together by lath and chicken. Just a little shake, not the cut. The first thing we did was take those off. The building was kind of austere after that, but it was not safe. Then, shortly before the building was demolished, a drunk came booming up Alcohol Boulevard in his car. He missed the turn, he went up over the lawn, and right into the wall. That was a solid brick wall, and he went through it just the way Red Skelton used to go through those brick walls. The other head of the car was there. He wasn't very thick. I don't know where afterwards he pulled the bricks off. They were just held together by gravity more than anything else. We were lucky to get out of the line. We had a remarkable supervisor in the training school. Mathematician, math supervisor. Does anybody else remember Miss Beasley? Sure you do. I think if we had 500 Miss Beasley scattered around the nation now, we'd have no trouble with the math scores that the kids get on the test. She was an excellent teacher. We stood in awe of her because she had a voice and she could hear 5 blocks away. But what she said was worth listening to anyway. Miss Tanner, I hesitate to mention because I was so frightened. She was mentioned out. Was there anybody ever who was not afraid of Miss Tanner? You weren't. Good for you. You're a brave soul. Good for you. Well, her assistant, Georgia Coy, you remember her?
Yeah.
Great girl. We love this Coy. She, of course, married and left, but we love Georgia Coy. Miss Marker, the art supervisor, you remember her? She goes back a long way. Two great school supervisors that I want to mention. First, Edith Hammock, the sister of Isabella. Remember her? Was hired right out of the normal school and came back as supervisor in the first grade. And she started, whole generations of us. She worked there for many, many years in our school career. And she taught reading. Believe me, we learned reading. And just as I said of Miss Beasley, I say of Miss Hammock, if there were 500 Miss Hammocks scattered around teaching reading in the first grade, we'd have far fewer remedial reading problems in our junior and senior high schools. And then finally, I want to pay tribute to Miss Cunningham, fourth grade supervisor. She's only there a couple of years. You may not remember her. She is an elderly lady, rather small, rather stooped, with a very kindly smile. I was not a good student up to the fourth grade. In fact, I spoke about hanging on the principal's office and saying, oh my God, why am I here again? I was one of a group that enjoyed disturbing student teachers. They were fair game, we thought. The student teachers did not enjoy being disturbed, of course. And when I was in fourth grade, there was some talk, which got back to me, about demoting me to the third grade until I could learn to behave myself. This, of course, was a source of great concern to me. Miss Cunningham called me in, and I was afraid that's what she was going to say. But she had my test scores in her hands, looked at me. She said, Bristol, what's wrong with you? And I thought fast and said, Miss Cunningham, I guess I don't assume responsibility. So I put her back on her heels a little bit. Then she looked at the desk for us again. She said, you know what I'm going to do? If you can behave yourself and stop disturbing student teachers, I'm going to skip you to the fifth grade right now. What do you say about it? And she did. And it worked. From then on, I was a pretty good student. I really was. Now, a teacher that has enough nerve and supervisor to do that with a troublemaking kid is a rare bird. I've always been grateful to her. I think she's earned my high honor. Miss Cunningham, fourth grade supervisor. Miss Hammond mentioned the extracurricular activity, the only one that I can recall there for college students, the elementary school kids had a few others that I won't mention. Says it's going down the canyon after school. Anybody want to write a true history of what happens from the canyon to San Diego? I could write a chapter or two. But the extracurricular activity for the normal girls, I don't mean normal girls in the usual sense, I mean the normal school girls. We assume you all know the rules. This is one of the days of Proposition 6. The extracurricular activity was rowing. The girls took part. Do you remember the crews? Do you remember these names? Albatross? Christus? Petrol? Good. Water Lunch? Dragon? Zlat? No, have I forgotten something? Sculpin? Lapis? Sculpin. The big thing of the year for them was the regatta. Held down off the Zlat boathouse on San Diego Bay as the four Zlat moved out to Mission Bay. And the kids used to go down there. How we got there, I guess our folks approved. We climbed all over the top of the building to this channel's vast disgust. Remember her shooting snobs every night. And watch our teachers work like coaches out there. Growing. They got points for speed, for style, for a whole lot of things. That's when I first met see the kids down there that last time I went, helping the girls get their boats out into the water and helping with the work. It was a great sport for them. They all enjoyed it, and as you know, those organizations started moved on into sororities and still exist on the campus. The period came to an end when the normal school went out of existence and State Teachers College emerged. There was a special ceremony on the front of the campus on the portico with the seats out front, remember how they used to be. The student who spoke that day, honoring both the normal school board of directors who were retiring and the new State Teachers College board of directors, is here today, and her name is Emily Todd. Emily, will you stand? All right. I told Emily the other day that I was in love with her when I was 12 years old. She said, gee, why didn't you tell me? She, at that time, made the speech transition for the school. She was spokeswoman for the student body. She had to lead the school play. She was a very important person on the campus. And it really real well because we lived in the same house on Campus Street nearby. Since leaving the campus, she's been very busy. I found from her husband, we have two daughters. I believe it's 11 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. Isn't that something? Right at the top. She's the youngest great-grandmother I've ever seen. I'm happy now to introduce the man who changed the campus as no man had changed it before. Being in the word Aztec, named the college paper the Aztec, the sports promo Aztec. His name, we call him Freddie. He's Fred Osenberg, longtime professor of English at Arizona State University. Dr. Osenberg will tell us about the years 1921 to 23. I haven't seen him, I hope he's here. How do you keep your hair so brown? Doesn't get black. Good for you. He does a lot. I don't believe it. Fred?
This thing working here? I'm supposed to tell you the story of how you became Aztecs, as I remember it through a faint haze of a bottle and a half, which you know, golf. If I roll a little bit, Louis Shelbot back there will correct me. It all started one afternoon when Louis, Fred Morris, and I were sitting in the paper planner office complaining because we didn't have, see, we were the three reporters, you know, the papers, and complaining because we didn't have a name. Papers referred to us as the JC, sometimes the Wampus Kitties, we thought that was horrible. And the students couldn't get together on the name. So I told them the problems that I had had the year before when I was attending the Del Sur, Sue West. I had a bright idea that I could use some art motifs from the California building, like Inca, sort of Mayan, Aztec. And Louis said, maybe Aztec would work as a name, not Inca. Mike, because the previous year I haven't used any of them because Sam Hamill, who's Sam? Sam, we're out here, Sam, said that would be irrelevant. Sam and Babe Morris, who has left us, and Al Reeder, who has left us, said that would be irrelevant. About as irrelevant as using the pictures of the graduating seniors from high school instead of our own. So I gave the idea up. I was talking to Louis and Fred about this. We decided that Aztec would be a good name. We were professionally interested. It fitted into the headlines. It was different. It had a sound to it. Aztecs were fighting men. The athletes would like it. We thought that would work out pretty good. Well, how do you get it to the college? And Louis came up with a solution. He said, anything people read in the paper, they believe. We'll put it in the paper. And the students will believe it. We don't have any problem. So the three of us sat down and wrote our stories. We made it rather small so that the city editors would mangle it. And we got the stories in. We attributed the announcement to the student body president, who said this consequence says of a contest, they had selected Aztec. We were expecting a little annoyance when we came up to the campus. We even expected perhaps a little more than annoyance. But we didn't expect the hostility we met. We were threatened with being kicked all the way downtown to rewrite the story. So the three of us immediately went into hiding. We maintained a very low profile. We never moved into groups. So we didn't talk about it. And that's why, over the years, little by little, it has been forgotten how the whole thing happened. Because the three scoundrels who did it sort of slipped off stage and stayed off stage. Well, I didn't suggest the name for the paper land. It was not part of my hands. The gentleman who did that has asked me not to mention his name. He said, under no circumstance, isn't that true? Isn't that what you said? Martin Garner told me that, and I'm not mentioning his name. This is something that Louis doesn't tell you. So I'm telling this for the first time. After about a week or so of being threatened with bodily harm, incidentally, as I recall, there really weren't very many. They were just big. Dean A.G. Peterson put it more correctly. He said, you have acted in a most undemocratic fashion. You have usurped the rights of the students to name themselves. He was indignant. He implied that the three of us had taken his sociology class for nothing. I think most of the students would have felt the same way about it. But the noisy and the rather physical ones were the ones that made the impression on me, at any rate. After about 2 weeks of that, I was beginning to feel very insecure. So I dropped in to see Coach C.E. Peterson. I said, Coach, I think I'm going to retract the whole thing. I'm going to write a story in which I will state that the student body president has announced that he didn't say that. And what he did say was that there is going to be a contest and that Aztec is just one of the names. What do you think, Coach? Let's see if I can do it this way. You remember the quote. He looked past me at the wall. Now, if you remember the coach, you remember that when he did that, that meant that he either was probably who had more to do with it than I did, simply because he came up with the bright idea, put it in the paper, and you'll all believe it. Louis Schelbach. There's Louis.
Remember the the bonfire the night that the Civic Auditorium burned down and all the firemen were in there and all. There were lots of gold footballs, basketballs, and track shoes given out in those days. In 1923-24 and in 24-25, we were the football champs of the Southern California Junior College Conference. Also in basketball. In track, the 1924 team took home the cup for having won the championship for 3 years in a row. In those days, there were 30 men on the football squad. Basketball had 8 lettermen. Baseball didn't get going until the year 25-26. Then in 26-27, we left the Junior College Conference for the big time, the Southern California Intercollegiate Conference. No freshman could play, and I guess you know where we ended up that season, way down in the hole. But that fall, we had an exciting event in the fall of 1927, when the whole Pomona student body came down on Ruth Alexander, and we went down to meet them all on Friday night at the dock, and the next day played the football game, and we pretty nearly beat them. We had a lot of social activity. The women's rowing crews, which had been going since 1906, were still there in 1924, and the junk club, which had been going since 1914. By June 1924, there were also 2 fraternities, Epsilon Eta and the Haas. There were the Sphinx, the Shenyo, Fraudinoi, and Como. There was a Skull and Dagger in the chemistry fraternity, the Delta Peppa. Others, of course, were added and dropped through these years. Some of the rowing crews became sororities, and by 1927, the Del Sudoi State listed 28 organizations. The first fraternity dance was January the 10th, 1925. In those days, we danced cheek-to-cheek to "I'll See You in My Dreams," "Show Me the Way to Go Home," "Yes Sir, That's My Baby." We were starting to wear lipstick. We had our stockings rolled just below the knees and the skirts just about touching the knees. Some of the girls even started smoking. We had a good time those days, although here in the roaring 20s, we were a little slow getting the hip flask that some of the other colleges appeared to have. Mostly we didn't drink at our dances, and it was pretty obvious who was going out to the car to share the bottle and neck a little. In 1925, Mission Beach opened up, and when there wasn't a school dance, bunches of us would go out there to dance to the big bands. And when we went to the beach for swimming, the college crowd took their ukuleles to Old Mission. Remember Andy's? And that gal who knew everybody in their business? And remember Slim's, where the boys used to go for a hamburger after they left off their dates? Some of us are bitter. And fans. And the fellows who used to talk philosophy, I guess, at Dick's College Pharmacy. And Americans. George is here today. George, where are you? Our politics were pretty freewheeling in those days. The AFB presidents we have in the years of 24 to 27 were Henry Parrish, Myron Bryant, Mary Irwin, Markham Gardner, and Loris Hoyt. Associated Men's Students was run by John Hancock, Ed Rufa, Dave Barnes, and maybe Guy Fawkes. The year 1926 to 27, they had only one meeting, but they had 4 pictures in the annual. The AWS was headed by Dorothy D. Stevens, Mary Irwin, Harriet Pollock, and Arthur Tyler. About this time, in the spring of 1927, it was noticeable that the Phi Sigma Nu and the Phi Lambda Xi held most of the school offices. So I don't know how many of you knew about this, but there was a coalition of the other fraternities and sororities. They put up a slate of non-controversial people like me, and that's how I got started. I would never have dared to run for an office, but they asked me, did I want vice president of student body or president of the AWS? And I thought I'd like the honor better than the work. So I got on the student council. I was a great leader. I voted yes on everything. Except changing the colors to red and black. But that's Guy Fawkes' story. It was the following year. Publications in those days were important. The Paper Lantern was edited in 23-24 by Bernice Cornell and the next year by Louis Schellbach. It changed to the Aztec in 25-26, and the editors were Leavenworth Colby and then Alex Crosby. Del Sudoeste's 1924 editor was Freddie Osenberg. The 1925 staff, headed by Wallace Dickey, was the first to use the Aztec motif. Hugh Gillis was editor of the 26th annual, and in 1927, we had our first real rascal as editor. We had some small potatoes finagling, but Dana Thompson absconded with the money and left the annual up to Sue Wolbert. We finished with a tribute to speech and music. Debate and oratory flourished in those years, and we won many a contest. Drama was alive and well downtown at the Savoy Theater and the Spreckles. In a state under Sybil Eliza Jones, we produced 17, A Passing of the Third Floor Back, Trelawney of the Wells, Arms in the Band, and best of all to some of us, College Cut-Ups, which was a riot every year with a pony chorus, crazy plays like Wild Nell, the Pet of the Plains. Deborah Smith, who came in 1922, put on lovely, lively operettas, Once in a Blue Moon, Robin Hood, Serenade, and of course in 1925, The Pirates of Penzance. We loved that one. The girls got to wear pajamas in one scene, and the pirates crept up and grabbed us, and we shrieked in ladylike fashion. What we learned in class was largely up to chance.
Thank you, Ruth, for a charming presentation. Guy Fawkes was class president. He was an athletic leader. He was a member of various student body organizations. And one of the famous Fox brothers who did so much for the college. Incidentally, the Fox brothers distinguished themselves in lots of ways. One of them was to marry such beautiful girls. I don't know how they did, but they all did. Guy will tell us about the school years 28 and 29. Guy?
Decided it would be interesting to get all of the amateur athletes together for a very big track meet down in state. And so we were kind of interested because we had been track man at Santa Monica High School. We said, let's enter. So we did. And we looked around to find a track, and naturally building houses in the various vicinities. We spotted one out here with a wire fence around. So we thought, gee, that's great. So after work, we dash on over and hide our clothes because we wore a track suit and run around the track. Until one late afternoon, we got caught. Right now, his name at that time was Coach C.E. Peterson. And he says, yeah, fellas, come on and join. But he says, are you just starting your training? He said, yeah. It's kind of late, isn't it? After 2 years, he said, this is kind of fun. Well, I won the quarter mile for 425 yards. And by that time, my legs were so tightened up that I was walking. And my brother was walking right along beside me. And finally, he reached over and got my arm. He says, come on. They're all gone now. So I said, oh, brother, wasn't that a performance? 2 nights later, the doorbell rang about 8 o'clock at night. And who was there but this nice man, C.E. Peterson. So he came in, and he talked us in, first of all, college. Second, to come to the Aztecs. Now, we sat there with Tad, and he says, well, I can let you go, but I can't let my older brother Morris, because he was the great worker of the family. I was the shirt of the family. But that's the way I got started. February was 24, and it's changed my entire life. I didn't know I was a school teacher. Dean C. Peterson did. And clear on up to the junior half of the year, of following years, he assumed that that's what I was taking, his teacher's course. I said, good Lord, school teacher? He says, sit down, I'm going to point out to you what you're going to do from now on. And he did, and I worked hard, and I became a school teacher, and I loved every minute of 4 years. 4 years. If you try to remember back, you find out memory naturally is kind of rusted, sort of the running board. So when I think in terms of some of these events that you folks have mentioned, sure, it just popped right up into my mind. Show you how your memory can be bad. Representing some of the schools, especially the District of Escondido, we had to make many trips on up to Sacramento with all the big boys, you know, to tell us all about what's coming on, how dire the whole situation was. I remember one time I went up there, and we had a lot of people around us saying, hey, how are you? I said, gosh, I have to admit, but your face is familiar, but I can't possibly come up with your name. And then the next one, face is familiar, but I can't come up with your name, and so on. And the last guy was standing here, and I said, you look quite familiar, but, and this guy reached over the shoulder, and he said, damn fool, I'm your brother. For these greatest animals up in Wyoming and Montana, and the season's open. And he's a crack shot, and he is up there. And I think fond memories of San Diego State College. One more to the line, Joe. Coach and I were standing, you know, the old college now. The steps came down, leaning against the door, and gee, all of a sudden, some girls came walking down. What up? She got to do. And I just went, punched Coach in the arm, and I said, God, there is my wife. He said, you must be crazy. And I said, watch. 4 months later, I bought $4 in an old Model T car and married her, and she is right here.
That's wonderful, guy. I'm certainly glad you mentioned Charlie Peterson so prominently. I'm sure you all know that the Peterson Gymnasium, the great big building over the far side of the campus, is named for him. He was here for many, many years. He was a very, very fine leader and example for all the students. Sue is down here. I haven't seen him yet. Yeah, we asked Don Wolfer to discuss the years 30 to 33. Well, I'm going to introduce Sue for two talks. That's pretty hard to do. It's not for Sue. Don, we hope to meet him. His sister, Sue Ernest, will discuss those and also will give us her reminiscences of the faculty, our beloved Dr. Sue. Sue?
Don regrets very much that he had to do a quick trip to Santa Barbara, where his brother-in-law is in intensive care with a heart attack. And that's why he's not here, and he apologizes. He did want me, however, to mention just a few of you people who are here today with whom we worked in the period of 1930, 31, and 32, and 33 as well. Carol Woods Nelson, Alfred Ellison, Dave Jessup, Helen Squires, and Virginia Newman were very active in the student council in that time. Again, Milford Ellison, Thelma Paget, Lionel Rydell, Rena Case, yes, Juliet, for one thing, very active in drama. And in music, you notice the same people appear again and again. And in music, Phyllis Barker, Rena Case, Beth Porter, Alta Robbins, Helen Squires, and Grace Walker. I'm mentioning the people who are sitting here today, but we know there were lots of others in these events, but these are the people who we're so happy we're able to come today. Richard Baranda was active in the Aztec Band. Journalists included Arden Van Dyne and Milford Ellison. Now this is 32. We'll come to Vic in a minute in 33. In football, Harold Grant and Bill Bailey and Norman Knowles. In track, Dave Jessup. In golf, Paul Flack and Dick Worthington. In skull and dagger, Harriet Sargent, Ruth Hamill, Rena Case, Alton Robbins, and Milford Ellison. In Pendragon, Billy Grimsey, Lionel Rydell, Irene Watson. And dear Albert Seeley, Albert Ellen Seeley, was very active in Roy. Skipping quickly to 1933, Abby Jean Johnson and Gertrude Tyler were running the freshman class. I'm president of the Associated Students with David Jessup. The new gym had just been completed. Vice President was Virginia Newman, and Helen McGee was secretary. And in the student council, we find Dick Whitaker, Bernice Kelleher, and Abby Johnson. The finance board was headed by Keith Atherton, and the Aztec was written, the editor was Dick Whitaker. The El Palenque included Gene Swigert on its staff. And in drama, again, we find Rena Case, Betty Grimsey, Lucille Knowles, Don Wolfer. In opera, John Tyers was singing opposite Rena Case. And in treble clef, Margaret Kendall and Phyllis Barker, Alta Robbins, Elaine Bond, Renette Chase, Beth Porter, Helen Mazel, and Beatrice Schnook were all singing. And in men's glee was a bright young man who became a professor. Now Dr. Clifford Baker. He was also in the quartet. And in the orchestra, Gertrude Tyler. It's probably fortunate that my brother isn't speaking. I see how the time is going on. So then I will talk about what has been assigned to me is a bit about the faculty. And now Dick has done such a good job in talking about faculty that I too am going to sharpness, or we leave nothing for Jack Adams to talk about. I thought of talking about Dean Willis Johnson and the application of the project method. Or I thought of talking about President Hardy picking up all the banana peels for the safety of his students. I thought of talking about Sybil Eliza Jones and her aging car, Kavitka. And I thought of talking about a chemistry professor, a brilliant one, who had a cohort, another professor, who made very serious charges against a certain of the faculty, practically all of the faculty. These charges ranged from fiscal mismanagement to downright indecency. Now, there was one person who was not attacked. His name was John Adams. Now, it may be due to the purity of his character, or maybe because he had just arrived. This professor kept in his desk pistols and masks, which we thought rather interesting, and it provoked our curiosity. But when he finally accused President Hardy of gross mismanagement of college funds, and above all things, accused Irving Alcott of sex offenses, we knew there was something wrong. And so did the chief officer in Sacramento. He came quickly, and San Diego State was minus two professors. Today, we have with us, and they are all sitting over here, maybe they wouldn't mind raising their hand when I mention their names. We have the two Browns. The Brown who came first, Leslie, came in 1922. We have Dorothy Harvey and Jack Adams here on the stage. Alice Raw, then, now Warner. And Spencer Rogers, just a kid, but head of a department. Christine Springsteen, Harry Steinmetz, and Miss Sewell, now Storm. There were some who, and then of course the next year, in 1933, came Jimmy Crouch, and he's there. The ones who couldn't be here were Everett G. Jackson, who was preparing an art show, Chesney Moe, who just got out of the hospital and cannot walk very well yet, Abe Nasseter, who is enjoying his Sabbath in the way that he always does, and Baylor Brooks, who is on his way to Kansas, and then also Dr. Pfaff and Marguerite Reingard are not able to come. We have out there on the bulletin board notes from Dr. Franklin Walker, who many of you remember, and from Dr. Harwood, who was just not up to making the trip down from Claremont. I also want to mention that about this time, Mary McMullen took over the duties of Dean of Women. Ada Hughes Caldwell was not very well. Now, just briefly, two little incidents, or three perhaps, that had to do with faculty that were fun at that time. The sophomore class in 1925 decided to have a party in San Clemente, which at that time was a new subdivision halfway to Los Angeles. And Les Furness, my husband, had said, "I will provide the ethyl alcohol for the punch." This was prohibition. And I had, not knowing that he was taking this under the back seat, I invited Dean Ada Hughes Caldwell to come in our car. So she sat right over it. And when we got there, I had to quickly whisk her into the front door and get her busy doing her deanly duties while Les went in the back door with the booze. That same year, that lively sophomore class put on a dance in the library, if you remember where the library was, near the stairs. And about halfway through the dance, they decided it was a dull, dull dance that needed picking up. And so one of the students, who was a chem major and had the keys to the laboratory, said, "I know how to take care of that." And he did. And the party was so lively that the administration, which had been believing up to this point, sensed something was wrong, and they found out where it had come from. And in those more strict days, that student was sacked forever. He never was able to come back to San Diego State. Along with our real worship of C.E. Peterson is our real worship of Deborah Smith, who you probably know passed away rather recently. She would get special assignments for the students so that they would have unusual experiences. And one of them I remember was sending the quartet to Hollywood, where they sang in a number of places. And Ward Cash, sitting here today, and Les Ernest were in that quartet. She also was approached by the director of the Savoy Theater, who wanted to put on a musical comedy named Mary. And the director asked for 14 girls from the traveled wife. Three of the mothers would not permit their daughters to go. But 14 happy girls excitedly went down. They were going to be professionals, and they were getting $35 for 1 week of rehearsals and 1 week of production. The quartet also sang. Well, if the director found out rather quickly that the Treble Clef girls couldn't dance. So he rushed down to the burlesque show and picked up the Nichols sisters. So the Nichols sisters stood at the end of the chorus line, and they could dance, but they couldn't sing. So the quartet was invited back for further performances, other productions, but never again was the Treble Clef invited. And the final little thing, you know, in the early days, we worshipped intelligence tests. We thought they were the answer and gave us full knowledge of the capacity of a human being. The Thorndike intelligence test was introduced to San Diego State in the spring of 26. And one professor noticed that two of his students fell in the lower third. So he brought them into his office and sternly said, "It is quite clear you do not have the capacity for college work. I advise you to drop out and we'll save the taxpayers money." Well, fortunately, they paid no attention to him. They both went to the University of California at Berkeley. One of them became the chief engineer in the design of the Oakland approach to the San Francisco Bridge. And the other one was in charge of the entire fortifications of Wake Island. His brother is sitting here, Fred Butsey.
Sue. We have asked John Adams, longtime professor of English and the witty friend of faculty and student alike, to speak to us briefly this afternoon. You should know that the Adams Building on the campus was named recently in his honor, an honor which he richly deserves. He will speak on the subject Back Through the Archives. Jack?
Thank you very much. I'm glad to